Xbox On.
Welcome to Xbox On, a podcast with one host about one console, Xbox. I'm said host Jesse DeRosa, and on today's episode, we'll be talking about the latest Xbox news for the week of April 25th, 2024, including Xbox is teaming up with Meta, but still not working on their own VR hardware. Embracer is reorganizing by splitting into three groups. Fallout is experiencing a major resurgence, and it's making me feel all tingly inside. All that and more. On this week in Xbox history, in the year 2012, 12 years ago, Prototype 2 was released for the Xbox 360. Prototype 2 is one of those games, well, like Prototype 1, where it's like at the very top of that list of like games I haven't played but I know I love, like I just haven't gotten around to it, it's sitting there, it's in my backlog, and I know one day I will play this and I will be only surprised if I don't like it, you know? I feel like it's one of those, you know, it's original IP. It's got a little bit of this, like, somewhere between AA and AAA kind of look to it. It's a little bit of a cult following. I feel like, it's action. It's ridiculous. It's like Spider-Man meets Venom, you know, meets GTA kind of ridiculous destruction, bad guy, superhero goodness. I want this game. I know it's good, but I'm ashamed to admit I have not played it. They did do that. I don't know if it's a remaster collection or maybe it's just an up-res collection, but it's a collection. It came with both the first and second game for Xbox One and PS4 that came out maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and it goes on sale quite often. That's one of those, it's one of those bundles I'll finally jump on one day, but it's hard to get around to playing games like Prototype 2 when there's always a new game coming out to capture your attention, and then when there's not a new game to capture your attention, there's something crazy like Fallout just having this random resurgence and suddenly capturing it. Listen, there's too many things capturing my attention. I need something to not capture my attention, so I have more free time to have my attention captured by things that captured my attention 12 years ago that I just didn't have time at the time to play, but now I have time because nothing's capturing my attention. So what I'm trying to say is I need video games to basically be more visually conservative. I need them to put clothing on that makes them difficult to stand out and look attractive. I'm saying a video game should not be allowed to go into public showing off its box art looking all attractive, because then I get distracted and then I start making bad decisions and playing the wrong video games, and I can't be held responsible for my actions. I need to blame the video games for distracting me in the first place, for making me go, oh, look at that video game. And then it's like the meme where the guy is with his girlfriend, but he's turning around checking out the other girl, and his girlfriend's looking at him all disgusted, but it's like me with Diablo 4 walking down the road, and I'm turning around checking out Prototype 2's butt, and in my girlfriend Diablo 4 is looking at me all upset, but it's like, hey, I listen, maybe Prototype 2 should put some fucking cloak over itself so that I'm not so distracted by its good looking gameplay. And that is how you open up a podcast, by offending half the audience before you even gotten into what the fuck the podcast is about. So it is an Xbox podcast, I'll tell you that much. Guys, welcome to Xbox On, where Mr. Mike Clark writes in and says, another week of the Definitive Edition Xbox podcast. That is right. This episode will be bundled alongside 7 of my favorite episodes of Xbox On, and they will be available for purchase for $12, or if you're at the $10 or higher level of my Patreon, you will get this bundle for only $9.99, and that will be available throughout the entire month of May. Just a little something to show that I appreciate you guys. I'll be calling it the Xbox On Definitive Edition. It's just a collection of a couple of my favorite episodes of the podcast. Yes, they are available on free feeds, but I figured y'all might like to have a little bundle where you can just get a curated list of my favorite episodes, and also I can milk you for all your fucking worth. So that's not real. I don't have a Patreon, and I'm not good at milking people. So we're going to move on into our notable game releases of the week. Unfortunately, it's a little bit like last week in that there's not too much going on, but, that's actually kind of a blessing. It's always a bad thing for the podcast when there's not a whole lot going on, especially in terms of, like, game releases, because it's like, oh, what are we going to talk about? There's nothing, like, going on, but it's also good news for literally everything that's not the podcast, because then it's like, okay, well, nothing's going on. I guess I got time to sit down and play Prototype 1 and 2. But if you are a fucking nerd and you don't like games like Prototype 2, and you do like games like Dragon Age, nope, not Dragon Age, what's it called? Dragon Hunter? Nope, not Dragon. What the fuck is it called? Dragon Quest. Oh my God, why was I spazzing out there? Dragon Quest, Final Fantasy, freaking Laser Suit Larry, then Ayuden Chronicles 100 Heroes is coming out this week, and I think you'll be really pleased with this one. It's available on Xbox Series consoles, Xbox One, PC. If you're listening to this podcast, it's available as of now, so why are you listening to this podcast when you could be playing Ayuden Chronicles 100 Heroes? Yes, this is probably 75 hours of pure Japanese role-playing bliss, and I highly recommend it for people who enjoy that kind of game. The more interesting, though, to me is this game that came out this week. It's available this Thursday, the 25th. It is a day one Game Pass game, and it is even though this is a game I'm probably never, ever going to play, I just got to say I have a lot of appreciation for what this game is, because it's just so, it's, you know, every now and then, again, you get one of these games, it's just like, so, oh, you, so cute, so charming, so silly. And that game is called Another Crab's Treasure. So yeah, day one Game Pass game, available on Xbox One, Xbox Series, PC. And if you really don't like Game Pass and you really don't like video game hardware that doesn't suck ass, it is also available on the Nintendo Switch, so you can play it on that potato as well. But this game, Another Crab's Treasure, looks really interesting because it's this cute, cartoonish, underwater... If you didn't know anybody, you'd say, oh, is that like some kind of action platforming game? Is that some like character platformer? Is this going to be like some callback to like the PS1, PS2 era character platformers that we used to get? No, it's actually not. Despite the fact that you play as this cute little cartoony crab and it's underwater and there's all these little critters and it's colorful and bright, this is actually a Souls-like game, just stylized and set to a cute, fun, cartoonish underwater adventure where you play as this trash crab. It's like a crab and his shell is, you know, he's armored up by wearing like this by wearing basically pollution in the ocean. He's got a fucking can of beans covering his back to keep him protected as he goes into battle, and he's got a fork or a dangle hopper in place of what would be a sword in a regular Souls-like game. So I don't know, this game, it's one of those games that just kind of tickles you with a little bit of a joy at the silliness and the sheer fact, you know, just the sheer audacity this game has to even exist. And apparently it's pretty good, it's getting some solid reviews, it's getting a lot of positive praise for just its charm and its silliness. So I want to just shout that out. Another Crab's Treasure. If you're a fan of Souls games, hey, what if, and I got an idea for you here, what if we just did like a single Souls game that wasn't all like ancient Asian version of European mythical dragons and creatures, and it's not all glowing flames and dark creepy dungeons and wet dank places and spiders and monsters and ghouls and pottery that has arms and legs for some fucking reason? What if we just did one of those games, but it's like a cute little crab and he's on an adventure? And I think that's fun. It's a way to get kids invested in this genre that has been turning this generation's men in boys into men. And yeah, so there's Another Crab's Journey, or Another Crab's Treasure, day one Game Pass. Worth checking. Listen, if there was like literally nothing else to play right now, I might be like, you know what? I know I don't like Souls-like games, but I want to try this game just because it's so fun looking. But I know I hate Souls-like games. Listen, it didn't work when you tried to do it with a Star Wars game, and I don't know why that's the, I don't know where I'm going with that. But I want to know. Moving on, Fallout 4, a game that came out in November 2015, is coming out this week, kind of, on April 25th, this Thursday, the day this podcast goes live. There is the big old update for Fallout 4 that brings the game forward to Xbox Series consoles. It's the big 60 FPS, higher resolution, next-gen, whatever, upgrade patch. So I guess we have yet to see just how much of an improvement this update really is, but it is worth noting because so many people are jumping back into Fallout right now that it's like, hey, now's a great time to play because it looks better on your Series X than it did on your Xbox One now. And this is especially great for me because I am one of those many people who is currently thinking strongly about jumping back into Fallout 4. So this is timely for me. All right. That's it for our game releases of the week. Let's get our feet wet as far as the news goes. Talk about a couple of mildly amusing stories, stories that we talk about as kind of hors d'oeuvres or appetizers. You know, you go to your waiter. I'd like a crab cake, right? you don't want a crab cake for dinner, but you might like to start your meal off with a crab cake, okay? So maybe your main entree today isn't going to be the fact that Todd Howard wants to avoid putting dates on Elder Scrolls 6 and Fallout 5, but you might like to have Todd Howard make a comment about those games as an appetizer, and then maybe for your entree you find out that, fucking Activision's laying off 2,000 more people. I don't know. Maybe that sounds like a good entree. Maybe you go for the chicken instead. But anyway, let's start out with a little bit more Fallout news here, as Fallout 76 has hit another player milestone where, as of Tuesday, they hit a 1 million concurrent player base on Tuesday on just Fallout 76 alone. Not only that, but at the time they were also touting that they had nearly 5 million players playing Fallout games on that single day. So that means people playing New Vegas and 3 and 4 and Fallout 76. And when you added all the player bases of these games up that day, they were at nearly 5 million people who were just like, hey, I want to go play Fallout because I watched this TV show and it's pretty fucking good. And that's, man, that's hugely important. It's kind of funny because it's like for the longest time, it was like nobody took video games seriously. Why would we make movies or TV shows about these? And then there was the era of like, okay, let's make some movies about video games in like the late 90s, early 2000s. And they were almost always shit. And then nothing really came of them. And then, you know, we took a big break and then came back again. And we got some more shitty ones. We got like Prince of Persia. And there was an Assassin's Creed movie at one point. I don't know. They do all these bad movies. And then a few years ago, it was like the world just kind of came together. And was like, okay, we're going to have a good Mario movie. We're going to have a good Sonic movie. We're going to have a good Uncharted movie. We're going to have a good Last of Us TV show. We're going to have a good Fallout TV show. And we've just been swimming these past few years in a bunch of video game adaptations that are, you know, some better than others, for sure. The Sonic movie is good. The Mario movie is good. But those two movies aren't good in the way that The Last of Us or Fallout are good TV shows. I mean, There's varying degrees of good. I would argue that the Mario movie and the Sonic movie are kind of doggy doo-doo compared to the quality of Fallout. Or I should say, because you can't compare Mario to Fallout, that's definitely an apples to oranges. I would more likely say Fallout does a better job of honoring what makes Fallout special and bringing it into a new medium in a respectful and accurate way. Whereas Mario movie was just a fun time, even if it was kind of a silly kids movie. And the Sonic movie is a fun time, even though I don't know why the fuck Sonic's got to be a little boy hanging out with a daddy figure who just happens to be a human. But Jim Carrey as Eggman is very, very good. And so I'll let a lot of things pass for that. All right. I'm getting distracted here. I just wanted to say congrats to Bethesda. Congrats to all the people who work on Fallout, the TV show and the video game series. This is a really, really cool thing to see happen. And it's just, I don't know, it's just fun to see people enthusiastic about Fallout, especially because Bethesda's name's been kind of a dirty word in people's mouths for a while at this point. And Fallout has kind of, you know, last time we saw Fallout was when Fallout 76 came out in 2018. And it has just been a blight on that franchise ever since then. And so it's really cool to see people not only coming back to Fallout and having positive sentiment towards it, but also Fallout 76 suddenly has, you know, this kind of redemption arc of people are like, hey, let's go back and give this game a try. Now that's 5 years old and there's 5 years of updates and modifications and changes and performance upgrades, and the game has been improved upon. And it seems like most people are coming back and saying the things that the few but loud Fallout 76 fans have been saying for a couple of years now, which is, hey, this game's actually pretty fucking good right now. And as someone who played a fair amount of Fallout 76 last year, I will chime in and say Fallout 76 is pretty good. And it's nice to see a lot of, not revisionist history, but a lot of this redemption arc, this second chance kind of come to be. And, you know, obviously the internet is very mob mentality. Like, it's, you know, one person says a video game's less than perfect, and then the next thing you know, it's got a 30% user approval rating on I almost said IMDb, Metacritic, and everyone's talking about how it's a piece of shit. Ah, Starfield's such a piece of shit game. Oh, loading screens, these are fucking stupid. You know, and thankfully, you know, we're getting like a little bit of the opposite of that. You know, Fallout had a good TV show, and now people are like, hey, I like Fallout. I'm even going to be open-minded and give 76 a try and see what I think of it as an individual. So that's pretty cool, and I like seeing that. So, keeping with Bethesda, but not necessarily Fallout. Not directly Fallout, but Todd Howard did have a little bit of, you know, he had an interview with IGN recently in which he was asked if it's still the case that they're not ready to start talking about release dates on different games and all that. If the TV show Fallout TV show success had changed the plans in terms of what the next project they're working on is, to which Todd Howard says, I'm going to avoid putting dates on any games. I've learned the hard way. So obviously our focus as far as new development right now is on Elder Scrolls 6, but that doesn't mean that we're not making plans for other things. We're going to do a lot of work, obviously Fallout 76. And we see the other community and we see the community, so many people going into that game, kind of rediscovering it. I'm just so happy that with where that game is, it really does. And I mean, this has been one of the best communities in all of gaming. Surprisingly, it's very nice. Very, very nice. Apocalypse. And we're doing a lot of work with Starfield as well. He adds, so we have really good updates that we're going to get announced soon for that game. So a lot is going on there. So basically just saying, hey, I'm not saying shit about, you know, the success of Fallout's TV show, maybe putting Starfield updates and Elder Scrolls 6 development on the back burner so that we could fast track a new Elder Scrolls game or a new Fallout game, or maybe, you know, giving Fallout to a different developer so we can get a new Fallout game sooner. All I'll say is that we're still working on Elder Scrolls 6, and then after that, our next game is going to be Fallout 5. And then in the meantime, we're also supporting pre-existing games like Starfield. So leave me the fuck alone. I'm not going to deal with your bullshit because we gave Starfield a date once and you guys got pissed. And we gave Elder Scrolls 6 a release window once and you guys gave a shit for it. And I don't want to be put in that position again. Or I don't want to put myself in that position again. So, and that's kind of what this quote says more or less. But he's acknowledging, you know. It is I don't know, man. It is a little bit of a weird situation, right? Because on the one hand, it's like, who gives a shit that the Fallout TV show is popular? It's like, what the fuck does that have to do with getting the next Fallout game out the door? Because as we all know, big AAA games, especially massive open world Western RPG style games like Fallout, take forever to make. These games in today's world, these games take like 5 to 8 years to make. So I don't know, what if Todd Howard did say, oh, you know what, the success of the Fallout TV show has made us realize we're stupid fucking idiots, and we're going to cancel Elder Scrolls 6, and we're never going to update Starfield ever again, and we're just going to go headfirst into developing Fallout 5. It's like, okay, well, let's say they did all hands on deck on a Fallout 5 starting right this fucking second because the TV show's popular. That game still wouldn't be ready for like 5, 6, 7 years, so like, I don't know, do you think 5 years from today, you're going to go to work and all your coworkers are going to be like, bro, have you checked out season one of Fallout and now streaming on Amazon Prime Video? It's like, what do you want to do about it? The show's successful. It's clearly having an impact on older games, which is in a way kind of better. It's like they don't even have to put the R&D and everything into making a new Fallout game. The ones that are already on the market that they've already made money on are just kind of resurging and making more money right now. And that's kind of a beautiful thing to have happen. So it's like, I don't know, maybe they're just happy with where they are right now. And maybe the success of the TV show doesn't necessarily spark like a demand and an outcry within the company to synergize and get a new Fallout game out the door ASAP. It's like, I don't know, man. They have passion. They have a plan. They have an internal roadmap. I know it's a little frustrating because we don't want to all have to wait 15 years between Fallout 4 and 5, but wouldn't you rather like the creatives and the visionaries and the people behind the game to be able to kind of maintain their creative control, even if it isn't exactly what you want in terms of like the timeline? You know, it sucks that there's no beautiful, brand new, awesome Fallout 5 to coincide with the release of this TV show, I guess. But like, isn't it just good to know that like there are plenty of Fallout games to play right now and that Fallout 5 will come out when it's ready? And when it does come out, it will probably be a reflection of the passion and the hard work and the vision of the people who made it. You know, it's like, I don't know. Calm the fuck down, man. You haven't even played Prototype 2 for the Xbox 360 yet. How are you going to complain about Fallout 5 not being, you know, around the corner because people like season one of the fall, you know, who knows what a lot can happen between now and when Fallout 5 comes out. You know, season two of the TV show could bomb. People could say, and that's no pun intended, you know, get it, bomb. But I don't know. A lot could happen. So just chill the fuck out, man. I don't know. They didn't have a fucking Stranger Things 4 video game ready to go. Actually, I think they did have like an iPhone Stranger Things game. You know what I mean? Not just because it's a TV show successful. You got to have the chill out, go drink drugs and do something else because you're spazzing out and we don't need it. All right. We got one here that there's really not much to say about, but it is worth mentioning, which is, you know, from VGC, that Blizzard's currently recruiting a dozen members or so to work on a new unannounced game. The open positions include 6 director roles, including creative director and narrative director. It's hard to glean much from this information as the project, based on the project descriptions or the job descriptions, but it sounds like the game is in the very early stages of development. Obviously, there's not much to say here. Blizzard just had a game they were developing internally get canceled after a couple of years. They just had layoffs at Activision Blizzard. They just got acquired by Microsoft. I mean, whatever the hell this is basically them saying, like, somewhere and somehow someone has a creative idea, and now we're putting a small team together to start to flesh that idea out and see if maybe there's a game to be made here. It's like spoiler alert, Blizzard is working on a new video game. That's kind of what this is. Hopefully it is, it's not just, hey, here's another Warcraft, or here's another expansion for WoW, or here's another Diablo, or God forbid, here's more Overwatch. Hopefully there's a brand new IP, a brand new game in development that is something wholly new and unique to Blizzard, and that it'll be exciting and fun to learn about as we get closer to it. But for now, it's like, cat's out of the bag. This video game developer is going to continue to make video games. So there's news for you. And then we got a couple quick little wrap-ups. I just want to touch on some really more like FYIs. First one being that on April 29th, next week, what is that, Wednesday, Tuesday? Monday. It's Monday, you idiot. Next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, Xbox is going to host an ID at Xbox Digital Showcase. So they did one of these last year, looked at games like Immortal, or 33 Immortals, which Phil Spencer was talking up a lot last year, and Lost Records, Bloomin' Rage, and Dungeons of Hinterberg, and things like that. So another one of these kinds of showcases will be happening next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. It'll be viewable on YouTube and all the various social media platforms. So we'll talk about that next week on the show. Whatever's notable from that event, we'll touch on the show. But aside from that, I also want to just point out that there's a Xbox sale going on right now where Xbox is heavily discounting their PC games. It's an Xbox Game Studios publisher sale for PC. So running from now until May 2nd, the promotion includes like deep discounts on like Ninja Theory games, Turn 10, Obsidian, Coalition, Playground. So right now, I think the first Hellblade's like 90% off to kind of hype you up for Hellblade 2, which comes out in a couple weeks. So just thought I'd throw that out there for those of you who I know we have some console defectors out there who play on PC now. Maybe you're someone who has your own library. You don't really lean on Game Pass for everything. You might be able to rebuild some of your Xbox library on PC with this sale. I don't know. I just thought I'd throw it out there. It's a thing that's happening. But that's it for our opening news. You guys, let's keep the boat moving, tugging along, tugboats. And then we'll get into the main news, starting with, of course, the games I've been playing this week. But before I can tell you about the games I've been playing this week, I first got to briefly but firmly tell you what it is I've been consuming, what it is I've been eating. And for this week, you guys, let me talk about something. So Mountain Dew put out a couple new flavors a few weeks back. I got the opportunity to try both of them, and I didn't really say anything on the podcast because honestly, if you're a longtime Xbox On listener, you know, it's like this show is somewhat unabashedly a little too on the nose with its like Xbox and Call of Duty and Doritos and pizza and Taco Bell and Mountain Dew. It's like, I'm not trying to be a walking stereotype for, the Xbox gamer, white American dude, Mountain Dew, Taco Bell, Xbox Live, Halo. But unfortunately I just do like all these things. I guess I just am that stereotype to some extent. And Mountain Dew's been a big part of this podcast basically from day one. But one thing that has changed tremendously, to use a Donald Trump word, a tremendous amount of change in recent years with Mountain Dew is just like, I don't know, like, you know what I'm talking about. Back in the day, Mountain Dew was like, here's the original Mountain Dew. And then a couple years later, they're like, fuck it, Code Red. And it was like, oh my God, there's a new flavor of Mountain Dew, and Code Red was awesome, and everyone loved it. And then like it was like this thing where it's like every once in a blue moon, every couple of years, it's like, wow, Taco Bell's got their own Mountain Dew flavor, and it's awesome. It's called Baja Blast, and now they got this new Mountain Dew, and it's called Voltage, and it's awesome. It was like every couple of years there'd be a new Mountain Dew flavor, and some of them would stick around, some of them would be limited time only. But the thing they all had in common was they were all delicious. And they all tasted distinctively like Mountain Dew soda, but with like a twist, like a different version of Mountain Dew. And it was awesome. And for a long time, we all loved Mountain Dew, and peace was kept in the United States. But unfortunately, in recent years, the Pepsi company that owns Mountain Dew has decided that you can basically just take any fucking artificial flavor, put it in a pool of carbonated water, bottle it up, and slap the Mountain Dew logo on it, and it will sell. People will buy it. Because the problem is, like, the last 5 years, Mountain Dew's just, they're on some fucking crack cocaine here, where it's at least 4 or 5 times a year, they have a new flavor. They got, like, a new Halloween flavor, a new Christmas flavor, a new 4th of July flavor, a spring flavor, a summer flavor, a fall. It's like they just got all this shit all the time. And lately, their thing they've been doing is, like, they've been bastardizing the Baja name, because everyone loves Baja Blast over at Taco Bell. And so now they're trying to fuck with that name by being like, oh, we made a flavor that's vaguely tropical. Let's just call it Baja Punch, Baja, you know, whatever, shit in your face. And the problem with it is, it's like, not only is it just too much to keep up with, but we are long past the days where a new flavor of Mountain Dew tastes like Mountain Dew. I don't really know how to put it to words, but if you are someone who has consumed a solid amount of Mountain Dew in your lifetime, you know exactly what I'm saying, where Code Red, Voltage, Whiteout, Game Fuel, Baja Blast, Classic Mountain Dew, these are all very different flavors, but they all taste like Mountain Dew. They have that, like, highly citrus charged kind of gamer fuel kind of flavor that Mountain Dew has, but they're all different. You know, this one's grape flavor, and this one's citrus cherry, and this one's regular cherry, and this one's just classic lemon lime, and this one's like a smooth, softer citrus, and this one's got raspberry in it. And like, that was kind of the signature of Mountain Dew, is like they all tasted like they belonged. You know, it's kind of like I was saying last week about how, like, Pixar has, like, this, you know, Pixar has this quality that, like, Blizzard has, where, like, even though Warcraft and Diablo aren't in the same universe, you can look at the two games and say, that's a Blizzard game, you know? Even though Lightning McQueen and Finding Nemo and Toy Story aren't the same fucking universe, you can look at them and see the quality of Pixar. Mountain Dew used to work that way. You used to be able to see, taste the different flavors of Mountain Dew, and even though they weren't the same flavor, they all were in the same family. It made sense. There was cohesion. But nowadays, they got, like, a new Mountain Dew flavor every fucking 6 weeks. And it just tastes like whatever. Like, so right now, the newest flavor is Baja Point Break Punch and Baja Laguna Lemonade. Honestly, I can't even keep it straight, because this is, like, the third time now they've released two random new Baja Blast-type flavors that are available for, like, 4.5 weeks. And they're only at Walmart, and it's in cans for 7 days, and then a bunch of fucking kids who love soda fucking buy it all up, and then it's gone. You never see it, and before you know it, oops, the Halloween flavor's on sale now. And so, I don't know. I really wasn't enthusiastic. I'm kind of over at this point. I'm not really, like, going out of my way to try new Mountain Dew flavors. I'm also just trying. I've done a good job in recent years of just kind of cutting soda out of my life. It's not something I lean on as much as I used to. So it's just, I don't know. It's like I'm over it. But I was at work, and one of my coworkers did, you know, he also enjoys trying the new Mountain Dew flavors. So he's like, Jesse, I got the new flavors here. I got you a bottle. Let's fucking do it. Let's try it. And it's like, if 5 years ago, even 3 years ago, you know, you drop me a new Mountain Dew flavor, I'll be like, fuck yeah, thank you, bro. Let's crack it open. Oh, fuck yeah. It tastes like Mountain Dew. It's so good, man. I'm all charged up. I want to play season 4 of COD. But, you know, I opened this. Listen, this is how despondent I am. This is how defeated I am. I opened up the Laguna Lemonade, which is mango lemonade Mountain Dew. And I take one sip of it. I'm like, yeah, it tastes like mango soda, but it doesn't taste like Mountain Dew. It tastes like Fanta or whatever. It just tastes like any generic fruit soda. You know, there's Fanta, there's Crush, there's Jarritos if you're in Mexico. I don't fucking know. There's so many random nondescript fruit sodas out there in this world. And we're at the point where all these random fruit punch, lemonade, raspberry, green Martian piss, Mountain Dews, they just all taste like Fanta. There's nothing Mountain Dew about it. It doesn't have a strong, distinct Mountain Dew citrus charged flavor that some of the older ones have. It's just shit. It's just random shit that Pepsi threw together and said, we can sell this to fat kids who are at risk of having diabetes. Fuck it. Why not? And that's kind of where we're at now. So I just want to say, yeah, there are new Mountain Dew flavors out there. I acknowledge them. I've tried them. I didn't even finish them. They got, you know, the personal size bottle that you get, like, at the gas station. I took, like, 2 sips and I was like, I'm good. I'm fucking good. That Mountain Dew has been rotting in the fridge at my job and at my office for like for like three or four, probably 3 weeks now. It's just, I don't know. And I'm not like, I'm not trying to be a hater. I'm not proud to be admitting this to you, but this is unfortunately the cliff that the Pepsi company has been backing me up to and trying to push me down is this fall from this falling out with Mountain Dew, where just there's so much all the time. It's, I haven't seen the movie, but I assume this is what it's about. Everything everywhere all at once. It's about the overwhelming amount of Mountain Dew flavors we've been getting. And it's just, I don't care. Like, it's just too much. It's too much. Fuck off. So Mountain Dew, you're on thin ice. But the classic flavors will always be classic. Listen, I still love Voltage. I still love Code Red. I still love Whiteout, rest in peace. I still love classic Mountain Dew. It's just, calm the fuck down. If I'm at Taco Bell, I'll get a zero sugar Baja Blast. But I'm not breaking my back over these things anymore, okay? I don't need the girl in my fucking sophomore math class to catch me at the skate park with swooshy hair and a can of Mountain Dew in my hand to feel cool anymore, okay? I'm an adult now. I have a podcast I can just brag about endlessly to a group of people who are never going to listen to it. So I have other means of feeling fulfilled and important. So Mountain Dew, you're decommissioned. Go fuck yourself. All right, let's talk about what I've been playing. Unfortunately, there's nothing exciting to talk about in this regard because it's not that I'm playing anything new. I'm not here to tell you that I got flown out to LA to play a beta build of the latest Call of Duty game, and here's 10 reasons why it's going to be the best COD yet. No, I've just been playing more Diablo 4 and watching more of the Fallout TV show. So with Fallout, I'm at the end of the second to last episode. So I'm basically on the last episode of the show, of season one, I guess. So I'm just about done with it. I'll probably be done with it by the end of the week. And I gotta say, the more I watch this show, the more I love it. The first few episodes, I was like, I'm pretty like captured. I'm definitely gonna watch this show and I'm enjoying it. But I don't know if I think it's the greatest thing ever. But the more I watch this show, the more I think it's truly great. It really is a fantastic show. Mr. Mike Clark writes in and says, Walter Goggins is fantastic in the Fallout show. Glad it is finding success and happy for the fans, but it just isn't for me, and that's fine too. Great show. Hope you all have a great week. What do you mean it's not for you? If it's not for you, it means you're a hater. Are you a Mountain Dew fan? Are you a fucking Mountain Dew defector? Mike Clark, you said follow up. Just finished the last three episodes of the Fallout show. And I have to say, it did get much better. Definitely has the Bethesda jank minus the T-pose that everybody loves. But it grew on me. I don't know what the fuck you mean it has Bethesda jank on it. Bethesda jank in for a Fallout TV show would have to equate to like terrible camera work and bad acting, you know, stiff acting. Although I do think it would be really cool if they did like a nod to the fans by having some like Bethesda jank in the show, by just having like a throwaway character or side character who is just comically like just stiff, who just like moves and talks very monotone and stiff, and it's just, there's just like a weird camera pan with him or something like that. It would be kind of a fun nod, a little fourth wall breaking to have some kind of joke or throwaway line with like a side character like that. But I don't know that we need that. I'm glad you're enjoying the show after having finished it. And seems like we're in a similar position where that latter half of the show is really what's picking up and making it interesting. It's a great show. And it's like a lot of people are pointing out, and even the original creator of Fallout pointed out in a statement where he was talking about how he likes the show, which is that by having Maximus, I keep forgetting her fucking Lucy, Maximus, and Mr. Ghoul, I don't know why the names are the things that never stick with me. It's like this great, you know, three core characters that represent three play styles of the game. And that's part of what helps sell this show so much to people who are familiar with the video game, is that you have like this very like good guy kind of character. You have this very like kind of neutral gray area kind of character. And then you have like the bad guy or the chaotic, ridiculous guy in the Ghoul. And that's, it's fun to have that kind of spectrum because it kind of represents not only kind of the different characters you might run into in Fallout, but also out there in the wasteland, but also the kinds of play styles that the game offers and encourages, and what makes the game so special, which is its crazy world and the ways you can interact with it. So I feel like that is what this show just nails so greatly. And without getting into spoilers, I gotta say the show picks up quite a bit. At first, Maximus was the character I was like, he's fine. I'm waiting for his arc to kind of pick up and become a little more interesting. And especially as he starts interacting with other characters and the show explores him more and more, it gets there. I'm very much invested in him now. Lucy's great from the start, you know, and then of course Mr. Ghoul, he's also excellent. He's of course supposed to be, you know, like, I don't know, he's like the badass guy, like the guy who's like, he's cool, he's intimidating, he's a piece of shit, but you can't turn your eyes away whenever he's on screen. I will say one thing that is like not a genuine complaint, but just something I can't not notice, is I feel like this show has just one too many scenes of like important conversations going on, and someone sitting at a table just kind of like knife and fork in a fucking Stouffer's microwave dinner and eating while they're like, I don't want to shoot you boys or nothing, but I think you ought to tell me the whereabouts of Misty Menthol right about now, or else I'm gonna put a bullet in between your eyes. And it's like, God, I'm getting so distracted by all the fucking microwave TV dinners people are eating while they're having very important conversations. So I don't know. I just thought that was kind of a weird observation, but it does seem to be a reoccurring point in a reoccurring. I don't know. It's not conceit, but you know, dialogue crutch. I don't know. What do you want to call it? It's happening. It happens a lot in the show. It's just kind of funny. But overall, yeah, I think the show's great. I think the writing's excellent. The acting's excellent. The setting is nailed. They really understand how to capture the tone and the energy of Wasteland, which is what makes or breaks the Fallout experience. And I think if you can nail that, you got the hardest part done. And that's what this show does best, which is, I think, why people are so into it. Why it resonates is the characters reflect the playstyles and they nail the tone, the setting, and the atmosphere of Fallout and the Wasteland. I will say I'm seeing a lot of like this. It's the best video game adaptation of all time. It's the best show on TV right now, kind of energy. And I'm not trying to be a party pooper or a naysayer. Like, I'm not trying to take anyone's fun away. If you genuinely feel that way, more power to you. I'm glad you're loving the show and that it's resonating with you to that extent. I personally don't, I do feel like this show is being kind of billed as like a 10 out of 10 must see best show of all time kind of deal. And I'm like, oh, it's like a solid 8 out of 10, maybe 8.5 out of 10, something like that. It's like, it's a great show. Don't get me wrong. I highly recommend it. If you're a fan of Fallout, it's a must watch. If you're a fan of sci-fi television, it's a must watch. If you're on the fence about whether or not you would maybe be interested in this show, I say, give the first episode a watch. You owe it to yourself. It's pretty damn good. I don't know. I didn't watch the Last of Us TV show. I did watch the first episode, but I didn't finish watching the show because I played the game. The game emotionally wrecked me. And then I watched the first episode of the show and I was like, oh, this is very good. But I've played the game and I know how this ends. And I don't really feel like being fucked up that way. So I'm just going to not watch the show. So I'm just going to assume, based on how good the first episode was and how good the video game is, that The Last of Us TV show is probably a better show. And it's not that we have to compare the Fallout show to The Last of Us, but it is to say that, like, I feel like the Fallout TV show is getting similar praise for being like a similarly incredible TV show. I'm like, I don't know about that, guys. It's pretty good. But then at the same time, again, here we go with the apples to oranges thing. I could get how it's like maybe The Last of Us is so great because it's a beautiful, heartfelt drama series. And with Fallout, it's like, well, the reason why it's so special is for the same reason Star Wars fans love Star Wars and Halo fans love Halos, because good sci-fi is good sci-fi because it gets you so connected and attached and invested in the world. And very creative fictional worlds are just fun to live in your head, you know, when you get sucked into them, which is, you know, what makes sci-fi such a great genre. And even though Last of Us is, you know, it's dystopian post-apocalyptic sci-fi, it's not the kind of sci-fi I'm talking about, where it's more of like the techie, whether it's like space sci-fi or like Western sci-fi, you know, it's like Fallout is also dystopian, but it's more a world that is unrecognizable. We don't really imagine an alternate US that is like Fallout, but we could maybe imagine an alternate world that is more like The Last of Us, where the only suspension of disbelief in The Last of Us is zombies are real. In Fallout, it's like, I don't know about all these fucking nuclear fallout shelters and mutated creatures and ghouls and all the fucking weird retro future tech. And, you know, it's a little more, something like Fallout leans a little more in the camp of Star Wars. And somehow something like The Last of Us leans a little bit more realistic, even though they are both, of course, entirely fictionalized. So I don't know what I'm really saying other than to say Fallout show, really, really great. I'm very glad people are enjoying it. I don't know if it's as great as people are saying it is, but it is very great. And it's great enough that I'm thinking about it. I look forward to watching it. I enjoy it thoroughly when I am watching it. And right now, the only fucking video game I want to play is Fallout 4. So I think the game is doing its job if it's entertaining me and making me want to go spend time and money playing Fallout video games. So it worked in that regard. And that is my plan this weekend, is to play some Fallout 4. I'm really excited. In fact, I've been playing Diablo 4 this past week. It's been my hockey and my NHL playoffs kind of companion. It's been my, you know, wake up on Saturday morning and go downstairs, make a cup of coffee, and play 2 hours of Diablo 4 before, you know, the rest of the world wakes up and does their thing, because my body's just programmed to wake up way too fucking early. And I'm enjoying it thoroughly, but last week when I talked about Diablo 4, my expectation was once I put some more hours into it, I'll have a lot more to say on this game, but I don't. Like, Diablo 4 is fun. If you like dungeon crawlers, Diablo 4 is about as good as it gets. Go play Diablo 4. But I, as someone who is a very surface level fan of this genre, I find it to be a very fun dungeon crawler, and it inspires me to say nothing else. This is the perfect kind of companion game, or turn off your brain and play kind of in the background game. I'm not terribly invested in the story. I'm kind of half paying attention to it, and I'm really enjoying the gameplay moment to moment, but Diablo 4 is not inspiring me to think or feel in any special way that makes me want to talk about it. It's just a game that I really enjoy playing. It would be like me trying to tell you about how much I'm enjoying Hot Wheels Unleashed 2, or how much I'm enjoying still playing Halo multiplayer. It's like, yeah, it's a great way to kill some time, and I'm enjoying it thoroughly, but it's not inspiring me to really talk about it. And so I just got to be honest. Diablo 4, great game. Glad it's on Game Pass. Glad I'm dedicating some time to experience it and have some fun in that world. But it's Diablo. It's a dungeon crawler. Let's move on. So that's really it for what I've been playing / watching this week. And by next week, I'll be done with Fallout, the TV show. And, you know, Diablo is a game I can probably just pick up and play whenever. And I suspect this weekend I'll probably be sitting down and spending some one-on-one time with the what vault is it in Fallout 4? I don't even remember. Is it Vault 1? I don't fucking remember. Who gives a shit? Yeah, it's Vault 1 in Fallout 4. Is it? Who cares? I'm going to play Fallout 4, and I'm going to look beautiful while I do it. So let's wrap up, take a quick break here. Come back in a minute after we drink some water and do some stretching, and we'll talk about the news this week, you beautiful bastards. I love you. And we're back. Let's jump into the news, starting with this story about Meta and Xbox teaming up. From VGC, Meta has announced that it's opening up Meta Horizon OS, the operating system that powers the Quest headset, to third-party hardware makers. Xbox, Lenovo, and Asus are among the first partners set to develop mixed reality devices for different use cases. Quote, this is from Meta. Xbox and Meta teamed up last year to bring Xbox Cloud Gaming Beta to the Meta Quest, letting people play Xbox games on a large 2D virtual screen in mixed reality. Now we're working together again to create a limited edition Meta Quest inspired by Xbox. So a limited edition Quest 3 or something like that, probably, that will probably have an Xbox skin on it, and then you can play Xbox Cloud Gaming in MetaQuest. It'll just be basically like a virtual room you sit in and have a big TV to play your Xbox games on. That's cool, but that's kind of, I mean, it says something right about that partnership. All right, continuing on. Asus's ROG Republic of Gaming will use its expertise as a leader in gaming solutions to develop an all-new performance gaming headset. Oculus Rift S co-designer Lenovo is also set to develop mixed reality devices for productivity, learning, and entertainment. CEO of Meta, Mark Zuckerberg, said in an Instagram post the following. You can imagine a lightweight headset that pairs with your computer and your desk to provide the best work experience, whether you're at home or anywhere else you go. That sounds like Apple's headset. Or you can imagine one of those fully focused on, or one that's fully focused on watching immersive entertainment like movies and videos at the highest resolution on an OLED screen. Or you can think of one that is fully optimized for gaming with support for all kinds of different peripherals and haptics. Okay, so far we're talking about traditional VR headsets. But then he goes, you can imagine one that's designed for exercise, lightweight, sweat. Oh, never mind. Next one. You can imagine one that comes out of the box with Xbox controllers and Game Pass so that you can immediately just start playing on a big screen anywhere you go. So it sounds pretty obvious that there's going to be some limited edition, low quantity Meta headset. It's probably going to be a Meta Quest 3 if I had to guess. And it's going to be an Xbox version. I don't know. Maybe it's black with green trim or something like that. Maybe it's got some Xbox logoing on it. I don't know. And it will come with an Xbox controller as well. Maybe it's that new Xbox controller that we're set to see unveiled in the next month or two. Maybe it's just the regular core controller that we have now. I don't know. And it will probably come with a 1 to 3 month Game Pass subscription with that. And the idea is that you put on your headset, you can do all the things you can normally do with a Meta headset, but there's also an app for Xbox Game Pass, and you click on it, and you can basically just play, you know, stream your Game Pass games to your Meta headset and control everything with an Xbox controller. That sounds great. That sounds fun. I hope that I can also do that on my Meta Quest 2 because I have one of those, and that would be cool to check out. That's all well and good. Actually, that sounds like a great handheld device for Xbox Cloud Gaming, if you don't mind having your face stuck on a device. Anyway, but this is just, I guess I should say, on its own, it's like, oh, that's a cool partnership, that's a fun thing, whatever. But we're talking about the same Xbox here that has said consistently, Phil Spencer in particular, you know, we're not actively developing a headset, we don't want to do VR, we're not really pursuing that market right now. But they're partnering with the biggest maker in gaming headsets. Maybe this is just them trying to build a good relationship with Meta while they're the industry leader and while, you know, they have the opportunity to kind of diversify and get themselves out there. Maybe it's just because, you know, Phil Spencer says every screen is an Xbox, and so might as well get yourself on the Meta Quest. All those things make sense, and that's probably really all this is at the end of the day. But this could also be Xbox's foray into, like, getting some data about VR headsets and seeing how people interact with their content on VR headsets and see if maybe there's a market for them to experiment with this. Because remember, while yes, Phil Spencer said they're not actively working on a VR headset, Phil Spencer did say every screen's an Xbox, and Sarah Bond did say that they're very committed to Xbox hardware and all that stuff. And so maybe in addition to the next generation of most powerful console ever made, in addition to the Xbox handheld that is all but confirmed that they are working on, maybe they're also working on some kind of Xbox VR headset. Maybe that's made in conjunction with Oculus. I mean, after all, this is the same Xbox that's talking about wanting to get the Epic Game Store and get Steam on the Xbox platform. So why wouldn't it make sense that maybe they're making an Xbox VR headset that runs Oculus OS or has Oculus games on it, but also has the Xbox storefront on it? So again, we're talking about this Xbox that wants every screen to be an Xbox and that wants to expand all the types of hardware devices that, you know, gamers can interface with. And I don't know, man. Maybe you just do a partnership with Meta and you do like a Xbox version of the Meta Quest, or maybe this is the precursor that leads you down the road of we need to make our own VR headset. So I just want to put that out there. I think right now this really truly is just about getting Xbox on every screen, about trying to meet VR players where they are, which is Meta. And, you know, again, it's that whole, like, Xbox talks about trying to chase the newer generations, how after millennials, basically, you run out of traditional hardcore console gamers, and then you start to get into more of the phone tablet era. And I think a lot of these younger gamers are also the ones dabbling the most with VR headsets, with Oculus Quest and things like that. And so, you know, if you're trying to meet the newer generation at the screens that they're already consumed by, you might want to jump into, you know, you get in bed with Meta and get your Xbox shit over on that platform as well. So that I think that is really the main intention behind this right now. But there's implication as to what this could mean for them in the future. And so I just want to touch on that. So not a whole lot to say about this, but I just want to bring it all up because this is the turning point, right? Where we go from Xbox isn't really interested in doing VR right now to Xbox cares about VR to some extent, clearly, because they view it as important enough for it to be one of the screens where Xbox lives. Next up, let's talk about Embracer Group. So a little bit of restructuring following all the studio closures, layoffs, sell-offs, buyouts, whatever, everything that's been going on with them lately. So from VGC, Swedish game and media holding company Embracer has announced plans to split into three separate entities going forward. The group will separate into Asmodee, Coffee Stain and Friends, and Middle East Enterprises and Friends. Each will be listed as separate companies on the NASDAQ Stockholm. So basically, this is a huge deal. Embracer Group is basically ceasing to exist. As part of the separation process, Embracer has entered into a new financing agreement through Asmodee, which is worth 900 million euro. Embracer says that the proceeds from this will repay existing debts and reduce leverage the remaining Embracer group. Asmodee will continue to operate as a publisher and distributor of board games, trading card games, and digital board games, and will consist of 23 fully owned studios. Coffee Stain and Friends, will focus on PC, console, and mobile games, including community-driven free-to-play live operation games and indie/AA games. It will operate under premium and free-to-play division. The premium segment will consist of the Coffee Stain, THQ Nordic, Ghost Ship, Tuxedo Labs, Tarsier, Amplifier Games, Invest, and others. And then finally, Middle Earth and Enterprises and Friends will be a creative powerhouse in AAA game development and publishing for PC and console, they say. That's a quote from them. And will own the Lord of the Rings and Tomb Raider IP, along with the likes of Dead Island, Metro, Kingdom Come Deliverance. So I just want to... This is the weird thing, man. Embracer bought the Middle Earth rights. They own the rights like Middle Earth and the IP and everything, Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, all that. They folded into Embracer. Now Embracer's basically going away and breaking into three groups. And one of those three groups, this is going to be its own company with its own stock and its own CEO, its own studios, its own publishing. And it's going to be called Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends. Yeah, there's nothing J.R. Tolkien would have loved more than putting Enterprises butted up against the term Middle Earth and Friends. Like, this is like fucking corporate America and Thomas the Tank Engine meets Mordor and fucking Frodo Baggins. This name is offensive, I feel like. That's not only the weird part, because it's like the core IP of this Middle Earth Enterprises will be Lord of the Rings and Tomb Raider. So I love that, like, in the same way, like, Mickey Mouse and Luke Skywalker are now brothers under the same corporate banner. We now got fucking Smeagol, Gollum, and Lara Croft, three amigos, which is fucking awesome. I love corporate consolidations. It's so cool. Along with Dead Island, Metro, and Kingdom Come Deliverance. So that's so cool. That's so cool. This is a fucking weird collection. The only two games here the only IP here I can, like, live with being together is Metro and Middle Earth. And maybe that's just because both Lord of the Rings and Metro are based off important works of fiction by renowned authors. Anyway, studios joining Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends will include Crystal Dynamics, Dambuster, Eidos Montreal, Flying Wild Hog, Tripwire, Vertigo Games, Warhorse Studios, and 4A Games. So, I mean, okay. In an open letter to shareholders, Embracer Group CEO Lars Wingfors said that the decision to split the group into three separate entities will help them work in different strategies. There is not, he says, quote, "there's not one way to do business, but some business models are more similar than others," he explained. "The same goes for business people. The ambitions may be similar, but the approach differs. The similarities between the businesses that make up Asmodee, Coffee Stain and Friends, and Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends are striking, but also are different. There are differences when it comes to the go-to-market strategies and business profiles. All with companies that have bright futures ahead. By perfecting this is what is working for each of them, and by continuing to cooperate when it makes sense. There is significant untapped potential within the group, which I'm confident will structure the new structure will unleash. This will empower each individual and each team to grow and excel further, blah, 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 and create blah, blah, blah. Corporate shit. Obviously, the way I read this, and this is, you know, obviously I'm a dumb middle manager who doesn't have enough of a brain to really understand the deep financial implications and the business implications of these deals. Like, this is a little over my head, but as someone who pays attention to enough of what's going on in the games industry, it just seems like what this is about is splitting the debts more than anything. It's about saying, all right, Embracer is in serious financial shit, and the only way we're going to get out of this is by taking our biggest debts and spreading them out among different companies. And so now each of these three entities has their own debt to face. And by splitting off this way and by entering this new finance agreement, they're able to kind of structure things in a way where each company assumes a different set of debt, so no one company is completely, you know, up to their nose. And then each company has a slightly different approach in terms of like what kind of IP they handle and what kind of games they bring to market. So that if one fails, it doesn't necessarily take down the other, because one's the one that's focused on free-to-play games and multiplayer games is different from the one that's focused on indies and AA games and having a consistent portfolio of AA mid-budget games, which is different from the one that's all about high-profile AAA, like big notable releases that take longer to make, and you'll have fewer releases, but you'll have more prominent and notable games. So with Middle Earth, Enterprises, and Friends, you got looks like more of the AAA kind of like stop what you're doing and look at this kind of game. With Coffee Stain and Friends, it looks like it's more of like the live multiplayer stuff, the indie stuff, the AA stuff. And then with Asmodee, it's more of like the fucking nerd stuff. They got the board games, they got the trading card games, they got the all the niche shit and all that kind of nerdy crap. So it's like they got these three segments that all do different things and can find ways to become financially, you know, independent and in their own unique ways, where they work off their debts, they find their own successes and failures. And this way, again, if one of them falls down, it doesn't bring down everything else with it. So this is really just about, and basically, in a way, this is Embracer going, yeah, we grew way too fucking fast. We bit off way more than we can chew. We were not bringing in enough revenue to justify our growth rate and the amount we were spending on acquiring. And then when interest rates got high and the economy got rough and the games industry started facing difficulties, it became very clear that we were fucked and that we made bad decisions. So we had to sell off a bunch of shit, and now we're splitting into three groups to try and salvage as much as we can and to try and avoid, you know, completely going under. And this way, if one of these three fucks, one of these three companies just goes completely away, at least, you know, maybe you can preserve Middle Earth and Friends, and then Frodo and the zombie from Dead Island can continue to be under the same family banner as Kingdom Come Deliverance. So this is, I think, I'm not going to say, oh, I have better ideas of how you can handle this, but this seems like a good idea if your biggest desire is to keep this shit together and not have to break things apart and sell things off and fold everything all together. But it's weird, man. Like, it's like a few years ago, it was like THQ Nordic is being formed and buying up all the old THQ IP. And then it was like, now Koch Media is getting involved, and it's like Koch Media and THQ Nordic. It's like, okay, now they're getting Deep Silver and all these other guys, and they're forming a new parent company called Embracer Group. And it's like Embracer Group keeps growing and growing and growing and growing. And look, now they own Lord of the Rings and Tomb Raider. Now they're growing and growing and growing. And it's like, okay, we fucked up. Let's just size back down real fast, real hard. And that's where we are today. And so we got these three groups. And if you like your nerdy shit, your little board game Orcs and Elves shit that you'll never hear about in the mainstream, you got Asmodee. If you want all your typical THQ type stuff, as well as some live service multiplayer games and in mobile games, you got your Coffee Stain and Friends. And then, you know what? We really just need to rename these again real quick. Have it be Asmodee, Coffee Stain. Coffee Stain's fine. And then Middle Earth Enterprises, although you could just call it like, don't even call it Enterprises. Call it like, I don't know, Middle Earth Entertainment or something like that, you know? Just something that's a little bit... What does WB call theirs? They're called... They're WB Interactive? WB Entertainment? Yeah, just be Interactive or Entertainment. Just that's the tried and true one we've been doing for like 30 or 40 fucking years of video games. You just... The name of the thing plus Interactive. Middle Earth Interactive presents Tomb Raider. It's like, okay, I can live with that, but it's Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends. Made me feel stupid sitting here in my boxers in my own goddamn room talking to myself about Lara Croft and Friends. Anyway, hopefully this means that a lot of these teams and a lot of these games have more life to them, that these developers will get to continue on, see the light of day, keep their jobs, make more video games, put good stuff out there, and then hopefully these companies can become financially sound and things will work out. But as of now, Embracer Group's basically no more, and we've got Asmodee, Coffee Stain, Middle Earth Enterprises, and I'm not going to say End Friends because that's fuck off. But yeah, it lives on. Please, for the love of God, sell off Middle Earth. you don't deserve it. All right, that's it for all the big news stories. You guys, let's wrap up with some important enough news stories. Stories important enough to make the podcast, but not important enough to warrant their own discussions. Coming up first, and this one's pretty exciting, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, the Star Wars game that came out around this time last year, is coming to EA Play on Thursday, April 25th. So all EA Play members will have access to that. The game from Respawn Entertainment will be on PC Game Pass and Ultimate Game Pass members as well. The So, you know, if you're an Xbox Game Pass member or EA Play member, it's a pretty good get. I want to say I'm going to play this, but I would genuinely give this a try if it was just like a slower time of year, but I'm already up to my fucking nose in games I want to play, so no, I'm not. But people love that game, and that's a great get. It's only a year old, so hey, you wait a year and you get that included in Game Pass versus buying it for $70. It's not bad value. All right, next up, new details about Tales of the Shire, a Lord of the Rings game, have been revealed. So speaking about Middle-earth Enterprises and friends, coming to the Xbox Series X and S and PC via Steam, the game will let players live the life of a hobbit in an idyllic town of Bywater when it's released in the second half of this year. Announced last September, it's being developed by New Zealand-based special effects prop company Weta Workshops, which is best known for their work on the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit films, and it's being published by Take-Two Private Division label, I think in like 2021 or whatever. Weta got a lot of investment money from, who was it? Was it like Epic Games or something? They started shifting their technology into a way where they could start working on video games with it. So I'm actually kind of surprised we're already seeing a game come from them so soon. This game's weird. It says players will create and personalize their own hobbit, decorate their home, explore Bywater, and engage in relaxing activities like cooking, fishing, foraging, and gardening. It basically looks like a Lord of the Rings version of Harvest Moon or Animal Crossing or whatever. So not to say this is a terrible IP to do this with, but it's, I don't know. Did anybody watch or read Lord of the Rings and their takeaway was like, ooh, these hobbits live such a beautiful, tranquil life. I wish I could just be a hobbit and tend to my garden and pick weeds all day. Weird fucking game, man. Weird fucking game. We can't get my Buzz Lightyear video game, but we can get this. Okay, that makes sense. All right, next up, Kena: Bridge of Spirits looks to be releasing for Xbox consoles. Finally, 2.5 years after it released for PlayStation, the Xbox Series X and S version has been classified by the U.S. Entertainment Software Ratings Board, ESRB. The game was originally released in September of 2021 as a timed exclusive for PC and PlayStation. I've been waiting for this game. I really want to play this game, so hopefully this would be a perfect like July release, please, for the love of God. This is cool. It's exciting. I definitely want to play this game. So if you are someone who is interested in Kena: Bridge of Spirits, it's that kind of PS2 era style action platform style game that came out a few years back. Looks like we might be getting it on the good side of Xbox. Our penultimate little news story here is that Atari has revived the Infogrames brand, which will be used as a new publishing label. The brand, which hasn't been active for around 2 decades, will specialize in acquiring publishing games that fall outside the core portfolio of IP associated with the Atari brand. Infogrames was set up in France in 1983 and initially specialized in developing and publishing home computer games, many of which were exclusive to France, also before branching out into consoles back in the 90s. Maybe that's why I don't know. And then finally, the latest Fortnite Festival update has finally been added and includes support for Rock Band 4 controllers. So if you have a guitar controller for Rock Band 4, you'll be able to finally play the Fortnite Festival using that controller. This was an update promised a while back, and so now they've made good on it, and you can do that. And so that's exciting for Rock Band fans that wish Rock Band was still around. So that is it for all of our news this week. You guys, it brings us to the end of the show. This brings us to my favorite segment of the show, the only segment really worth a damn, the comments, the shout-outs, the write-ins from YouTube.com. You know how it works. You head on over to YouTube.com, click on the latest Xbox On episode, you type in Xbox On, click on the podcast, hit subscribe while you're there, leave a silly little heart emoji on episode 24, and you can say anything you want. Click on the latest episode of the podcast, drop your comment. Don't leave a comment on a podcast 4 episodes ago. It's not cute. You can say anything nice, anything mean, anything in between. Just say something so I know I'm alive. And yeah, I'll read it on the show. I don't give a shit. I'll read it. We have 6 comments to get through today. I love saying to get through as if it's like it's a burden. I have to read these comments. No, I look forward to this. So please, thank you for writing in. First up comes from Mr. Cargo Runner, who's become quite a regular recently. So thank you, Mr. Cargo Runner. Good to see you here. This comment I have titled Scones, Fallout, and Frame Rate Debate. Mr. Cargo Runner, who runs cargo for British Cargo Imports and More, says, I am British, and I have never had scones for breakfast, ellipses. Scones feel like cake, so more suited for lunchtime / afternoon with tea. Cargo Runner, let me stop right there. You're right. And I did refer to scones as a breakfast treat. And you know why? Because we're American. And you know, while you guys were busy inventing scones and tea, we were busy creating a little breakfast pastry of our own called the donut. And if you can eat a donut for breakfast, then that makes a scone look like a fucking cakewalk by comparison, no pun intended, with the fucking cakes and the donuts. But I don't know, man. Is a scone a great afternoon snack? Absolutely. That makes perfect sense. But I'm an American, so I'm an American. So to me, a scone, when you wake up, you you brush your teeth, you go downstairs, you drink fucking coffee with so much cream and sugar and vanilla extract that you think you're gonna your head's gonna pop, and you eat fucking scrambled eggs with all the cholesterol and the cheese and the fucking all the stuff in it, salt and the pepper, and then you get the bacon, it's maple lacquered bacon, and it's got all the salt and the sodium and the fucking red meat you don't need, and then you have toast, white toast, no nutritional value in this white toast, and you butter it up and you toast it and you do all the things to it. This is the American way. We have the scones, we have the donuts, and then we go, why am I fat? How did I get fat? How did I become, you are a British, I am a fat. So I'm sorry. My American sensibilities got the best of me. You continue on and say, everyone's complaining about games being 30 frames per second. Well, I just started playing Fallout New Vegas on the PlayStation 3. I have the Game of the Year version with all the DLC, and it's too much for the PlayStation 3 to handle. It randomly drops to 1 frame per second. Yep, a slow 1 frame per second slideshow. You have to quit the game and restart. I am playing it just wishing for a constant 30 FPS. Before you say, I should be playing on Xbox, I already have 100% achievements on the 360 version and Steam, so I decided to go for the trophies this time on PlayStation. Fallout New Vegas is my favorite Fallout game, as the world lore, characters, and dialogue are all really consistent and believable. You really have real choices and consequences. Fallout 4 is a much more action and combat-oriented Fallout because enemies are waiting outside most locations. Fallout 4 has the best looks and gunplay, but I find the writing pretty weak, making the world and story hard to believe when in comparison to the other games. All right. Cargo Runner, this is a great comment, except now I got to stop you because where you pointed out my silly boyness with the scones and the breakfast, I now have to point out something you probably already know because you've played the game and 100% it on Xbox and PC, but the reason why Fallout New Vegas is so ass on PlayStation is because the PlayStation 3 hardware was famously a bitch to develop for, and Bethesda games were famously horrendous on PlayStation 3. Apparently Fallout 3 and Skyrim also run like absolute doggy doo-doo on the PS3, and I think Oblivion as well. So the fact that you can't even get 30 FPS on this PS3 game isn't a testament to how, not that this is what you're suggesting. I don't know what you're suggesting. Maybe you're just providing a fun anecdote, but it's not a way to look at what we're complaining about with modern games and 30 versus 60 FPS and to say, look how good we have it now compared to how it was. This is just an example of a fucking broken game that should have never been released for the PS3. I'm not trying to say PlayStation fans didn't deserve to have these games. I'm just saying, these games, they just didn't happen on the PS3. This is like an infamous thing that people know, is that Bethesda games, and you know, obviously this one was made by Obsidian. Shut up, you know what I mean? They used Bethesda's engine, and it was using the assets of Fallout 3 to make another Fallout game. These Bethesda games on PlayStation 3 were horrendous, and everyone knows you should avoid them like the plague, which is why one of the many reasons why Bethesda's always had a better history on Xbox. But yeah, I mean, listen, man, I'm not going to tell you not to do it, because there's a game I've done a similar thing with. Listen, I've played Sonic Unleashed on mobile phones. I'm talking Nokia. I've played Sonic Unleashed on the Wii. I've played on the Xbox 360. I played on the PS3. I played on the PS2. I played on the... No, actually, the PS2 is the only version I didn't play, but the PS2 is the same as the Wii version. It's a slightly worse version of the Wii version. So anyway, the point being, I know what it's like to love a game so much that you play all the versions of it, including the bad ones, because that's what love is about. It's about taking the good with the bad and learning to accept the faults and appreciate the upsides and say, I take you for all that you are, not just the parts that I like, or not just the parts that are convenient to me or beneficial to me. You see, I've never been married, but I know what it's like to commit. I know what it's like when you love a game so much. I know what it's like when you love a character so much, like Chip from Sonic Unleashed, and you say, gee whiz, Chip is such a wonderful character. I can't wait to see how they use him in future Sonic games. And then, lo and behold, they don't use Chip in future Sonic games. And in fact, future Sonic games are far cry from what Sonic Unleashed is, because Sonic Generations has no fucking story or integrity when it comes to its narrative. Sonic Lost World, it's a Saturday afternoon cartoon. What the fuck is this? It's a Saturday morning cartoon. Even like Sonic Frontiers, for as good as the narrative is, and as good as the game is, Why are we skipping over Chip? Why are we just avoiding this world adventure? Listen, Sega struck gold. Sonic Team struck gold when they found out Sonic works very well in this Pixar-like world adventure kind of setting. And now we're just going to say, nah, fuck that. We're going back to Green Hill Zone. Are you kidding me? But I love Sonic Unleashed. And I know the Wii version isn't as good as the Xbox 360 version. And I know the PS3 version doesn't look and run as well as the Xbox 360 version. But I know the Wii version's still pretty good. And I know PlayStation 3 fans deserve to enjoy Sonic Unleashed. And so what I do is I play all the versions of it. And I love them all like they're all my own. And I love them for who they are in sickness and in health, for better and for worse. Because that's what it means to commit yourself to something you love. And now, I've never been married, but if it's anything like how I feel about Sonic Unleashed, then I say you ought to get all those trophies on Fallout New Vegas for the PlayStation 3. And while you're at it, make sure you drink a shit ton of alcohol, because you're going to need to be so fucking intoxicated to get through that nightmare. Cargo Runner, thank you for writing in. And thank you for not only writing in, but thank you for having, although I've never seen it, I believe them to be the largest testicles of any Xbox On listener. That is still within a healthy range, you know, large enough that they're impressive, but small enough that a doctor wouldn't go, oh God, we might want to run a test on those, you know? So good for you, man. Next up, Corey C830 writes in. Corey, I think this might be your first time writing in. I'm sorry if it's your second or third and I'm forgetting. Please find it in your heart to forgive me. But you write in with a fucking bonkers long comment here. And I thought about trimming it and Xing out some of it. And then I remembered, this isn't a professional podcast. We're not like a part of a video games network. I'm not a journalist. I have no integrity. I don't give a shit. I'll waste every listener's time talking about nonsense if that's what it means for making sure that I'm entertained and that I'm filling out the gap. You know, I can't have an hour and a half long podcast. I gotta stretch this shit out to 2 hours. So I'm here to read your comment in its entirety, pay you the respect you deserve, and let's just get into it. Halo Season 2 was at... context. Last week, I was talking about how Halo show sucked ass. I didn't watch season 2, but I'm sure it still sucks ass. I hear it's slightly better, but I'm sure it still sucks ass. Fallout TV show is awesome. And for context, of course, I'm coming from the perspective as a big Halo fan who is severely let down by this horrendous TV show. With that perspective in mind, Corey C. writes in and says, Halo season 2 is absolute fire. People forgot the Halo show was in development hell and passed around from many studios and writers in the beginning. That's why season 1 was kind of all over the place. Like 6 different studios, 5 different streaming services, and 9 different writers passed it around. In season 1 was still hugely successful, even though people who never touched the game loved it. But then you fired the people who did season 1 after being passed around for years in the studio, and writers, because some high-profile people became available to do season 2. And the people that go on to do season 2 really respected the material and the content better and had better writing and a better direction. And it actually had pretty great numbers, like the Fallout TV show. Superior, even. It was the most watched thing on Paramount Plus. It had 500 million minutes and views within 4 days. Do a quick Google search and you'll see just how successful season 2 was. Even 1 was successful as well. This is common. Let's stop right there for a second. First of all, I did know that the show was successful and that people with tiny brains enjoyed season 1, and people with no context for how fucking incredible Halo 3, 4, and 5 are at just fucking whatever. That's fine. I remember the development hell. I don't remember the specifics of the number of writers and everything it went through. So I'll just take your word for all that, because I'm too fucking lazy to do the cursory Google search. Excuse me, Bing search. This is a Bing podcast, Corey. We don't Google shit. The only thing we use Google for is to Google Bing so we can get to Bing.com, okay? Correct yourself. Be better. Anyway. Yeah, no, I'm not trying to discredit that, and I'm not necessarily saying that you're here to correct me, but you are pointing out the important details, which is that the Halo TV show was definitely successful enough to justify a second season. The Halo TV show was well regarded by people with no context for what the fuck Halo is. That doesn't really mean it should exist, in my opinion, but I am happy that people enjoyed it. But yeah, I'm not trying to downplay that. The thing I'm trying to say is The Last of Us is The Last of Us through and through, and it is a great piece, is a great way to respect the game that it's based off of, and please and entertain the fans while also becoming something accessible for new audiences. The Fallout TV show does exactly that same thing with Fallout. Why couldn't the Halo TV show do that with Halo? Why did the Halo TV show have to disrespect the wonderful narrative that Bungie and 343 had worked on and said, nah, casual audiences won't appreciate this story, even though Halo kind of has a fucking badass story. And they just went ahead and did their own fucking nonsense. So I'm just here to say, yeah, it was successful. Yeah, that context is important. And yeah, I'm glad people are enjoying season two. But that doesn't justify spitting in the face of what Halo is all about and making whatever the fuck that abomination was, even if some people did like it. I don't know. It's just like, why couldn't you make a show about all of those things you did in season one and just have it like not be Halo? Because what did they do with like the fucking girl with the undercut, the Korean girl in the first season? They just kill her off in episode one of season two. Like, what do they do about Master Chief never fucking wearing his helmet and still never getting headshotted? Like, what do they do about the fact that Master Chief fucking dies at the end of season one and that Cortana takes him over and makes him a zombie? And you know what? I'm sensitive to spoilers. I don't give a shit if I just spoiled a thing for anyone because I didn't spoil. I don't care, dude. That's not Halo. I'm not gonna spoil Halo 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'll spoil the Halo TV show. Nothing you need to know, okay? Anyway, I'm glad people liked the second season. I'm glad it's in better hands. I didn't know that a lot of prominent people or some notable people got the opportunity to work on the second season. Maybe one day I'll get around to giving it a try, but yeah. I'm glad people like it. I'm glad it's successful. I just wish that the Halo TV show could have been made with respect for the fans and the people that made the franchise what it is and the people that gave the franchise the prominence and the excuse to even exist and sustain in the first place, rather than spitting in their faces, saying fuck you, and then making a generic sci-fi TV show for general audiences that will basically be entertained by anything that's got explosions and high budget special effects. So I don't know, like, what do you want from me? Anyway, you have a lot more to say here, so let's just keep going. Just because 9 YouTubers shit on the show doesn't make it bad. And plus, they announced right off the bat before they even created the show that this is not canon. This is not the video game. And many people don't have brain cells to separate it. That's fine. I never saw the show as canon. But your frustration with this point, I totally take. It's totally fair. You said, this is not canon. This is not the video games. Many people don't have the brain cells to separate the games from the TV show, but yet will read a comic book parallel timeline of their favorite comic book character in a different universe. Like Miles Morales, they'll go, oh, I didn't know Spider-Man was black. Why? But he's not. But you have to go through the trouble with that, or a different version of Captain Marvel or the Punisher for Ninja Turtles, like the Ronin series. It's like the same thing, that this is a parallel, different timeline, and the universe is never going to be an exact replica of what the video game is, even though the second season is pretty much was the end of Reach and the beginning of Combat Evolved. They literally end going to the facility, talking to 343 Guilty Spark, but people could try to put it down. But it doesn't change the absolute fact that the success of the TV show, Fallout, is still chasing popularity. I'm sure it will surpass it, but people's minds are already blown away by it. Okay. Oh, actually, let me just finish your comment out. We got like 2 sentences. A quick Google search will prove that Paramount is just a company trying to sell and is not thriving right now. But if you look at the views and the ratings for season 2, it's actually just like the Fallout TV show, if not better, like as far as views and minutes viewed, ratings and reception. That's why you could expect a season 3, because it's the biggest hit on Paramount Plus. Okay, we'll stop there. Oh no, I just scrolled down. You got another little comment here. This is like your little footnote here. People on the internet, I'll call this footnote. People on the internet create their own narratives, but they forgot one little thing called fact. It happens all over the internet, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, and everywhere else. Whether you love it or hate it, it doesn't change how successful it was, especially season 2. Actually, even if you go look at the season 1, it was just disjointed because of the development hell that it dealt with. So just imagine how good season 2 did. Can't wait to see where they take season 3. They actually set up the setup is perfect. Everyone I know and game with, even casual TV goers, enjoyed it even more than the Fallout show. Okay, we're good. Here's the thing, Corey C. I appreciate your feedback, because I think you are defending and preserving the point of the majority here, which is often overlooked. And you're right. When it comes to the internet, a loud minority will overshadow the reality of a situation and what most people are thinking and feeling. And it is true that the loud, overwhelming minority of Halo fanboys that are not happy with the Halo TV show created a narrative that is not reflective of the fact that the show is a success. People are watching it. People are enjoying it. All that's true. And that's great. And I especially take your point about people not being able to keep the two things separate, that the video games and the TV show are not related to one another. Trust me, I get that. I can't stand when that Buzz Lightyear movie came out 2 years ago and it was fucking good. And everyone was like, I'm confused by the movie. How is this related to Toy Story 3? Cute. I'm so cute. I'm so dumb. I'm so cute. All right, stupid little fucker. Like, stop pretending to be confused. It's actually pretty fucking simple what they're doing here. Like, trust me, I know that frustration. It is annoying. It'd be like if people tried to say, how does the Sonic 2 movie relate to Sonic Forces? I don't get how they came out in the same year and they don't acknowledge. I get that, man. That's totally valid. And I don't think Halo fans are mad because the Halo show is in the universe of the video games, or that's what we think and whatever. I think people are mad just because it's like, you can take liberties with the Halo universe. I'm not saying you have to tick for tat say the exact same things. I think there are some things that happen in Halo games, especially like in Halo 2 with some of the writing with like Gravemind and all that shit, where it's like, it's campy, it's goofy, it's video gamey, and it might not translate well to TV. So I absolutely am 100% okay with them taking liberties, taking out certain characters, changing how events happen, and doing things differently. I've never been one of those people. I've always been okay with that. You got to try to honor the source material while also accepting the strengths and weaknesses of the medium you're working within. So I'm cool with all of that. But you should be able to make a Halo TV show that has nothing to do with the video games. It is not the same universe, but is a Halo show through and through that pays respect to the IP, that is servicing the fans that made the franchise what it is today, and also can draw new audiences. And the simple fact is, the Fallout TV show did that. The Last of Us did that. Halo does not. Halo might be a roaring success in terms of viewership and what it means for Paramount Plus and all that. I don't really give a shit about any of that. The fact of the matter is, Halo fans should be your most important demographic, because worst case scenario with the Halo TV show is that newcomers don't care for it, but at least the fans enjoyed it. But they completely spit in the faces of the fans. And yeah, maybe season 2 turns that all around. That's great if that's the point. But I don't know. Someone should have had enough respect for their source material. Someone at Microsoft or 343 should have had enough respect for the Halo IP to go, this is hot garbage. We're not releasing this with season 1. There are plenty of things that are bad that are very popular. Do I need to remind you that Harry Potter exists? So the fact that it's still popular doesn't negate the fact that I think it's damaging to the Halo brand, because the most recent Halo games haven't been what everyone wanted and have had severe issues. And then they made a Halo TV show that didn't show that wasn't proof of how a Halo TV show should be done, even if it was popular. And on the other end, The Last of Us doesn't have that problem. Fallout doesn't have that problem. So I don't know. It's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. It is true that all these things can be important and notable. You know, if you're only concerned about the bottom line for Paramount, then yeah, everyone's wrong. The Halo show's great. But if you give a shit about the integrity of the IP and what it means to the fans and how they should, the responsibility they have to honor the fans when they make a TV show in the Halo universe, then I think they failed miserably. They fucking failed. They failed about as hard as you can fucking fail at this. I mean, this is the season 1 of the Halo TV show is about as bad as the worst video game. I mean, like, it's not like goofy and campy and completely out of touch in the way like the 1992 Mario Bros. Movie is or anything like that, but it's shitty like that movie is. Like, I watch both of them and I say these are both dog shit, even if they're shit for different reasons. Like, they're both bad. So I don't know. I think you failed in that way. Bad movies do good all the time. Look at Despicable Me. They're still making those things, okay? I've never seen Despicable Me. Maybe it's the greatest movie of all time. I'm just being an asshole. All right, let's move on now. Let's move on. Corey C., thank you for writing in. I just want to let you know that I really appreciate how organized your pantry is. Living with my girlfriend is not easy to keep the pantry organized, and I wish I could instill the kind of discipline that you have with your pantry in my girlfriend so that when I'm in a rush for work in the morning, I wouldn't be confused as to where the sugar is located, because it would always be on the same shelf in the same place. And I just think that's something you do super well that I just want more people to be aware of. So you're awesome, man. Kroenke writes in and talks about the problem with variable game pricing. And what's interesting about this is the next comment is basically the flip side of that argument. And then we got a lighthearted comment. We're out of here. Kroenke says, my problem with the whole let games be priced however they need to be conversation is that it feels too naive. If we open the floodgates and some games were $40 and some were $120, it would make absolutely no sense to the amount of microtransactions and paid DLC and season passes and cosmetics and loot boxes. The only thing you can successfully do is increase the price of the average game. I've seen no evidence that game publishers are more altruistic than other execs in other industries, so they will just jump to milking things for new opportunities for the most money. If Grand Theft Auto 6 is unsustainable at $70, that's entirely their fault. The game should have come out like 4 or 5 years ago, and GTA 5 should have been a decent improvement. Not an earth-shattering improvement that redefined what it means to murder pedestrians with a stolen car. So, Kroenke, I think you are 100% right. My whole rant and argument last week, and I even kind of like said something about it at the end and acknowledged kind of what you're saying, is that what I'm purely talking about is the way it should be and what would be the best for everyone. It would be the best for developers. It would be the best for consumers. It would be the more respectful to the art. But you are 100% correct. Greed and business ruin fucking everything. It facilitates the way our world operates and allows things to continue on and go around and exist, but it also kind of ruins the fun and everything. And I think you're completely right here that no, we couldn't do a variable pricing on gaming because exactly right. If someone says our game is going to be $120 and they get away with it, other game developers aren't going to go, well, we think our game's only worth $90. They're going to go, yeah, no, fuck it. Ours is also worth $120. Let's see if we can get away with it too. You're absolutely right. And that's why there's really nothing more to say about this, because there's the way it should be and there's the way it is. And like most things in life, the way it is, it's not the way it should be. And there's really no solution. And it just kind of sucks. Enjoy your inflation. All right. The flip side argument, Cargo Runner comes back. He's running right back around. You hear the compliment I gave his testicles, and now he's saying, totally agree with you on that game should be priced individually. Helldivers 2 is $40 US. That's a great price that gives people a really positive initial impression. Xbox charging $70 US for Redfall killed the game. Dead within a massive negative initial impression. If they had charged $40, people would have had lower expectations and the negative reaction would not have been so overwhelming. So here's the flip side, right? Is we can point to specific examples of games that could have done way better had they explored this dynamic pricing. Now, a game like Redfall, I think is maybe a little different because Redfall was pitched to us and I think intended to be a game that was of the caliber of a $70 game, but what we got was more of a $40 product. And so, yeah, maybe that could have helped Redfall a lot, but you got to keep in mind, a lot of people played Redfall being that it was an Xbox exclusive through Game Pass. So the main issue with Redfall, I think, was Redfall, not the price that was charged with it. Although, I do take the point you're trying to make regardless, because I agree. There are some games that would have gotten less shit had they just been priced differently. The one that comes to mind for me is, remember Evolve from 2015, Turtle Rock Studios. It was their first game after Left 4 Dead. That game was priced at $60, which was the price for a game back in 2015. It was a AAA game price. And that game got very like good, not great reviews, like very 7 out of 10 kind of reviews. And everyone's reaction to that game was, this game is a lot of fun. It's not worth $60. It's not $60 worth of shit to do here. And it gets old fast. And if that were a $20 or $30 game, would have been a very different narrative. Hell, if that was a free-to-play game with microtransactions, would have been a different narrative. Instead, it was a $60 game with very expensive microtransactions and not a whole lot of replayability and content there. And so that's a perfect example, in my opinion, of a game that could have done so much better in terms of its perception, it's the legs that the game carried on and the perception in hindsight. Had the game just been like, yeah, we're $30. We're just a multiplayer only game. We think we'll do better off selling at half the price of most games, maybe reaching more, you know, a lot more of a market at this lower price point. And we'll also satisfy our customers better by being like, yeah, we have a price tag to match the amount of content this game offers. So that's an example I think of, but I think your point, regardless of the game you use as the example, is right on the money. And I think Kroenke's right too. It's the way it should be and the way it is. What are you going to do about it? All right, we got two little wrap-up comments, some fun ones. Compassionate Choice LLC writes in. Haven't seen you in a while, man. How you doing? Thank you for writing in. He says, hi, Xbox On family. That's awesome. You've been getting into NHL this season, Jesse. I started playing hockey again. It's been a blast. Also, if you're down for some NHL 24 and you want this and you want that smoke, let me know. I'm always down for a game. I'm actually looking for a YouTube channel or playlist that explains how to play NHL games, because I'm going to learn how to play that game, but I cannot do it all on my own. I need a video tutorial to kind of explain the game to me, because sports sim games are just, I don't know why, they're just so fucking over my head. Like, even MLB The Show, which is the only sports sim game I've really ever played extensively. I was playing MLB The Show 24 a few nights ago, and I'm just like, I can't believe like I've played like five or six of these, and I still just don't really know what the fuck I'm doing. But yeah, thank you for writing it. You said, I started playing hockey again. Like, you started playing hockey video games again, or you started playing hockey the sport? Are you on the ice? See, the thing that makes hockey so fucking awesome is it's like, you have to master a mode of traversal in order to even interface with the sport. That's so cool, because in football, you got to be a good runner. In soccer, you got to be a good runner. In baseball, you got to be a good runner. Everyone has feet. Everyone can run. But in hockey, it's like, learn how to be a really good ice skater. And once you're a really good ice skater, then we can play a sport. And I just like, it's like this mashup of like this aggressive contact sport that's super high energy and super intense, on top of like, you got to learn how to be a really good fucking ski ballet dancer on ice. You got to learn how to do the fucking twists and the tricks and be a graceful little bird out there on the rink. There's just something like kind of like mind blowing about that. But anyway, if you're out there doing fucking the twists and turns and figure eights out there on the ice, Compassionate Choice, well then don't hold back. Send us the video. Let us see you be that little bird you are out there on the rink. Thank you for writing in. And lastly, you know him, you love him, you might even have him over for your house this Thanksgiving. Headhunting Halo writes in with our final comment, says, the Fallout TV show rocks! Probably the best video game adaptation yet. I rebought Fallout 4 and all the DLC to start all over again. I'm in love, LOL, exclamation mark. You are all excited for Deadpool 3. What? You all excited for Deadpool 3? You gotta do a fucking question mark, man. Y'all excited for Deadpool 3? The trailer was awesome. Everyone have a great week. Pass the rat away around as well, my fellow Raiders. Headhunting Halo, thank you for writing in. You're so beautiful. I love you. Yeah, I'm glad you're loving the Fallout show. I'm glad you're also in the Fallout 4 hype train with me. Baby, let's play it together. Let's do it together. We'll play Fallout 4. Even though it's a single-player game, we'll just get on the phone together, and we could just be there for hours not saying one word. I would still cherish every moment, and when I start to build my future, you're the main component. Anyway, yeah, the Deadpool 3 trailer looked pretty good. I'm excited for it. I love Wolverine, and that's it, baby. That's the whole fucking show. We're done here. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for bearing through to the bare end, and that's it. Be good, be kind, eat scones, not for breakfast, watch your weight, or don't. It's not my place to judge, and until next week, power your dreams.